Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment. Informed, intelligent, irreverent, political persuasions with Mike O'Mara and Chris Frakes. And now, here's Mike.
Yes, I'm Mike O'Mara. He's Chris Frakes, and welcome to another episode of Political Persuasions. We would like to apologize for not being on the air last week. I can give you a brief synopsis of what occurred. Chris was on the road in San Francisco and went on a sunset cruise out of the Fisherman's Wharf. And the sunset cruise turned into, well, an evening cruise. And then that evening cruise actually transformed itself into a sunrise cruise. Chris, unfortunately, didn't make the dinner bell for the actual show last week. And as a matter of fact, I know some of you, does anybody watch this on the Magic Box? We don't stream this on television, do we, Rob Spiewak? So, I mean, this is just for Chris, who is seeing me through the magic of closed circuit television.
That's right.
If I could, this is just for Chris. You might be able to hear the sound effect, but I will do my impression of, and we had some technical issues as well.
That kind
of
tanked the show. Throw that in.
But I would like to do as I was waiting for the technical issues after our late start to be resolved, and then we simply ran out of time. I would like to now do my impression of Chris Frakes as I was just watching him on the closed circuit television. Here we go. You ready? All right. On the count of three. One, two, three. There you go. That was me swilling a big jug of water. There. That's it.
Now,
you know, I've been doing this, pal, a long time. Yes. I've been doing this a really, really, really long time. And you know, when you brought it up right before the show, do you want to talk about how
I was?
We missed,
you know,
last
what?
Week's
because
episode?
Because I feel like, you know, I need some lashes here. I've never missed air in my entire career.
So how late were you out?
I wasn't out super late. I was out till about 2. I plug it.
Not super late. Oh my God! Wow, 2 Pacific. Whoa! Holy moly! Wow.
So yeah, not super late. I'm more of a night owl.
So is Oscar. It must be your generation. It's you 30 something guys.
Yeah, exactly.
That are,
so, you know, I plug in my phone. I had already set the alarm, you know, because I was prepared. Plug in my phone, crash out, and wake up, and I think it seems too light outside. So rush to the phone, and I'm like, what? Why? The phone died because I plugged it into a socket at my Airbnb that wasn't working.
How was your Airbnb other than
it
that?
It was okay. You know, it's like, you ever been to the small rooms in IKEA that they set up? Like, this is like a small space, you know? Like,
oh,
it was like that. It was under the staircase in an apartment. I was like the people under the stairs. It was like, it was clean and nice, but it was not.
The shower is actually a plastic watering
Basically
jug.
Yeah,
that you
was, yeah. You know, and
watering
that, actually,
can
that fit me. And at 6'5", that is rare. So, so then I call in, I'm 40 minutes late. I call in, we have the technical problems, and we aren't able to do it. So I apologize to our listeners. And
yeah, because we had, here's the amazing thing about what we do, and the fact that if we can be serious for a second, why I am so thrilled about doing this show. Because Chris, I'm sure you agree, we're talking hours now. We're not talking about a story breaking every month or so. We're not talking about a story breaking every week or so. We're talking daily. The climate of politics in America now, there are massive breaking stories with this administration on an hourly basis. And last week, my frustration point was the fact that we were just on the heels, great timing for when we tape this show, usually Thursday of every week, of the Hope Hicks resignation,
yes,
which was at the time a massive resignation with this close advisor to the president.
And I would say not on the heels. I would say on the pumps. Because she always has fantastic shoes, Hope Hicks.
On the black pumps. She wore those big boots one time. Lady knows her footwear.
She knows really her does. Fashion. I spent time with Hope on the campaign trail, and she was always, no matter how early or how late, impeccably dressed.
Yes, and what was she like? I mean, if you had to sum up the professionalism, the personality of one Hope Hicks. You guys get only obviously so much of it, but what with your personal interactions with Hope Hicks, what would be your opinion?
I would say she was she was a classic body man, right? Like she kind of attended to Donald Trump's needs. She was kind of put out there as a spokesperson, but she didn't speak much. She talked to us in the press with like, hey, here's what's going on. Here's when he's coming out. Here's like what's happening, and was kind of a herder of press. But, you know, she was not a seasoned press person. I mean, she was very young. She had not done traditional press in the way that other campaigns have press secretaries who have worked on the Hill or on other campaigns, and you kind of work your way up into a presidential. She just, like so many people in Donald Trump's orbit, just kind of arrived and was just like, oh, what do I do? So she learned very much on the job. They were not a campaign, you know, Hope and Corey and all of those guys weren't people who would necessarily return your emails or your calls, even on simple stuff like, hey, why are we here in Ohio today? What message are you trying to put out there? Why here? Nothing. Right. So like even the basic
you're saying
stuff,
the seasoned people that that have been in this game longer would be more
responsive,
diligent about returning that type of
getting because, that information because they know I'm about to be on CNN and I need things to talk about. So if I'm asking about that, then that's a natural thing for them to get their message out. It's a win-win. Oh, well, CNN wants to know why we're here. Well, we're here because this this county has seen the largest drop of jobs in any metropolitan area in the country. Okay, well like that's an interesting thing to say.
Yeah, the Hope Hicks insight is fascinating to me because obviously, as you know, there's been tremendous speculation as to what was the straw that broke the camel's back. Was it the testimony where she was grilled for hours in front of in front of both the Senate committee and also Mueller's team with this where the white lie story came out? But there were also
just
gossip
to
stories.
Remind our listeners, she basically said, "Oh yeah, sometimes I have to tell white lies in my job for the president."
Tell white lies.
Also,
and getting
something
kind of a free pass on some analysts that I've heard.
And to your point, you know what? It was not getting passes from people that I know as professional communicators, because the one thing you don't do, Mike, is you don't lie as a professional communicator. You saw what happened when Sean Spicer went up there the first day out and told a falsehood. He basically destroyed his credibility. And that's why you don't have to lie to a reporter. You can just say, we're not talking about that. Right. Like you don't lie, because if you lie and you get caught, nobody will believe you ever again. And that's all you have. You know, your credibility is a currency in Washington, and it's very, very difficult to get back once you go bankrupt.
Well, that was last week. And of course, this week it's the Gary Cohn resignation. And this was, as much as many people thought that maybe Hope Hicks was a tipping point, this truly was, in my mind, a bit of a tipping point with the Trump administration, where you're getting a situation now where there is the word chaos used much more frequently by the pundits that are out there. You've got a gentleman who has been seen, at least on the economic side of issues, as a stabilizing force in the Trump administration. And then this tariff situation comes down the pike. And Gary Cohn, who was close to resignation back when the Charlottesville racial situation occurred, stayed with the president, stayed there. It's just you're beginning to see a stadium full of people that have been with this administration that are now jumping ship. And I know you've got some insight on the Gary Cohn departure, but even more so than Hope Hicks, I think this is a pretty significant blow to the Trump administration. This is really starting to become quite a very scary pattern that we're seeing in the White House.
Well, and I have some numbers. I brought some numbers for you, Mike. And
today, I love numbers.
Today's number.
I love statistics. I love information.
Political Persuasions, brought to you by the number 43. 43%. Okay. That's the amount of turnover we have seen in this White House. So how does that compare to other administrations? So there's usually turnover in these first 2 years. George H.W. Bush and Barack Obama both saw about a quarter of their initial top-level staff leave within 2 years.
That's more than I would have thought, actually. That's
Bill Clinton finished year two with about 38% at his senior staff turnover, and George W. Bush saw about a third in 2 years. So President Trump, at 13 months, 3%. That's record shattering. And remember, we're not done yet. I mean, there's still talk about, does John Kelly leave the White House? The White House Chief of Staff, H.R. McMaster's. Even Kushner is on kind of the outs with his father-in-law. What does that mean? You know, there's a sense here, you know, Trump did a news conference earlier this week and made the case that, look, you know, you're always going to see people leave. They do that to get new opportunities. I can get anybody I want. Well, he can't get anybody he wants.
I can get anybody I want. I can. Everyone's knocking down the door. Everybody wants to work in the White House.
Not really the case from what you're hearing.
Not even close, because he has this reputation of he wants conflict. He wants fighting. He wants what you have to say when you're the shiny new thing, and then you burn out and you're ineffective and you need to leave, which is what we saw with Gary Cohen. So there's kind of two pieces here. One is just how Trump manages. Two, of course, is the Mueller investigation, which continued to get more traction this week. We saw just yesterday the New York Times out with a story talking about how Donald Trump asked both his White House counsel, Don McGahn, and his former chief of staff, Reince Priebus, hey, how'd it go when you were talking to the Mueller guys? Were they nice
to
you?
That's pretty big stuff right there, right? That is tampering in a way. Is it not witness tampering?
So it's not technically witness tampering.
But you're not supposed to ask the guy what he said in front of the special counsel.
But exactly. Any lawyer, and Trump's lawyers told him, hey, man, don't ask about this. But Trump can't help himself. He asked about it. And of course, you don't want to ask about it, because then prosecutors are going to say, wait, are you trying to get your story straight? Are you right? Why are you talking about this? Of course, there's negotiations to have President Trump testify in front of the special counsel. If he's asking other witnesses, what did you say? Well, then that raises a lot of questions about why are you asking that? You
know, where does this line up on the obstruction of justice? What is it? Everybody says this is not the right thing to do. Where is the, you know, you're not a legal analyst, but I'll ask you to put your lawyer hat on. Now, where does this fall with talking to witnesses about what they said on the legal scale? Where how much trouble could this be for the president?
It's only trouble. Basically, it raises alarms for prosecutors, and they start to say, okay, well, is there something here? Why would you be asking? Why would you be curious? What was that conversation about?
And I have to interrupt, because it's the overall impropriety and the lack of ethics about this. And I get back to this point. If there's nothing there, if there is no there, as we like to hear people say in the administration, why would you ever worry? Is it just pure paranoia? I don't think so. I think the fact that you're getting the president talking to other witnesses, there is something there. The man is worried. The man is frightened. And it just points in the direction of ultimately, when the Mueller investigation is concluded, there is going to be something there. And why would you ask anybody? If there was nothing to worry about, why would he be so obsessed with what witnesses are saying to the special prosecutor?
And therein lies the argument
special prosecutor.
And therein lies the argument for why defense attorneys will advise their clients, don't ask. It makes you look guilty. Right there to exactly what you said. So even if there is no impropriety, even if it was just like, hey, were they nice guys? What was that like? You know, it doesn't matter. You shouldn't ask. So, you know, that's something I feel like when you look at this Mueller investigation, Mike, you're looking at, you know, we're getting kind of the tip of the iceberg, and he knows so much more than the rest of us, which is proper and good. You know, and in fact, the Trump team would complain that we all in the public know too much, because all these leaks continue to
roll out. Ask you about that. We've talked about that. I think I made the statement at one point. It's been a pretty tight-lipped investigation. You disagreed. Where do you think this rates as far as leaking to the press? Do you think they've done as good a job as they can do with the Mueller team preventing a lot of this stuff from getting out in what now seems to be Swiss cheese in Washington, where leaks come from everywhere? How do you think they've done? What is your analysis of the Mueller team and the way they've handled it?
You know, it's hard to say. You know, we all read these stories trying to figure out exactly who the leaks are. Are they coming from Mueller's team, or are they witnesses? You know, in the case of, you know, this story around Trump talking to Priebus and McGahn about their interviews, you know, that could come from a lot of places. You know, Priebus and McGahn mention it to a couple people. It gets back to lawyers. Lawyers then go to the special prosecutor and say, hey, we're concerned about this, want to flag it for you. So there are so many people involved that you can't keep this thing tight. I think by and large, the Mueller guys have tried to keep it tight. And when they've made statements, they've tried to make the statements with their indictments. You know, their indictments will often say, hey, look, here's where we're going. Here's why we're serious. And here's what we're finding. This is not a fishing expedition. Because remember, they do have to show progress, right? They can't just kind of seal themselves off in a hermetic mm-hmm. room and do the Pope thing and, you know, go with the white smoke when they're done. They have to kind of show their work a little bit along the way so that their critics aren't going to be able to say they're just, you know, messing with the president and there's not going to be anything there. I think by and large, they've tried to do that through the indictment process. But
and the indictments that they are sending down and the deals they are making from the people that I read and pay attention to are pointing in the direction of money. Would you agree to that? That this seems to be moving in a direction of financial arrangements, perhaps affecting the way the I don't necessarily think that this dossier that they allegedly had on Donald Trump, some of this blackmail material. Do you think that this is pointing in a direction of money laundering or financial dealings with the president? And that may be the key to the kingdom as to why he is so paranoid about this investigation.
So a couple thoughts. One, I just wanted to finish the last one, which was, you know,
sorry, before I interrupted you. Okay.
It's okay. It's all
sorry,
right.
That's you because you were late last week.
You know, I'm late one time.
I interrupted you before you made your point. All right, well, so what was to retread that, what we're doing.
He's making his point through the indictments, but I also wouldn't be surprised if some of the leaks are targeted by Mueller's team to get the word out that they actually have the goods, right? So okay, I don't want to say, oh, he's completely blameless. I don't know.
So it's like a Humphrey Bogart movie then a little bit.
Bingo.
Too,
right? Yeah.
So, we're going to sweat them. We're going to sweat these guys by letting some leaks out, see? Yeah, that's what we're going to do. We're going to let these leaks out and then they're going to go squawking and then that guy, who's the drunk guy that got on TV this week?
Sam Nunberg.
Sam Nunberg.
Yeah.
Sam,
he's an interesting character.
Silly Sam.
He had a long history mm-hmm. with the Trump campaign. He was kind of like, he was Trump's guy, then he wasn't Trump's guy, but he would still talk about Trump and kind of be in the orbit, even though he'd be hating on Trump because he knew it got on Trump's skin. And then Robert Mueller served him a subpoena and he went on every cable channel imaginable to say, screw that guy, I'm not complying, he can eat my shorts. Like he did the full Bart Simpson on television. Right. And then later on in the day, he was like, nah, I'll probably comply. I mean, it is.
And
a
then Aaron
counsel.
And Burnett says she smells alcohol in his breath. That was just that. That's a. This is a reality show. We've never had this.
It's
in
insane.
Washington. This is the reality show. Insane is the word that I would use, Chris.
And there was a lot of
crazy.
There was a lot of chatter, Mike. I wonder what your thoughts are as a media watcher inside media circles. It was, well, was that the appropriate thing to do to interview this guy? Should we have given him as much press as we did? My thought on that was when somebody who's been subpoenaed by the special counsel investigating the president of the United States wants to give me an interview as a reporter.
1,000%.
Like, come on, sit down. What do you have to say here, sir?
Of course you grab that guy.
But there was a lot of teeth gnashing. Oh, this is why everybody hates the media, blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, you know, most people in America aren't watching cable news all day long. So they probably, right. Like, if they heard about it, they're like, who's that guy? And so I think it was a very navel-gazing piece. But I wondered, as somebody who is a avid news consumer, did you think it was overkill or was it appropriate?
It was not overkill because of the nature of the subject. This individual, Sam Nunberg, had a full-fledged meltdown on all sorts of media sources, culminating with this Aaron Burnett interview on CNN, which I watched, which was absolutely fascinating to me.
Yeah.
It's the subject. If it had been just a normal guy who went on and said, I can't talk about this, this guy was all over the place.
Not only,
and it became more newsworthy because of his behavior.
And it was like he was getting legal advice on the set. People were like, well, I don't know, man, you probably should comply. And he's like, you think so? Well, here, read my subpoena. Then he pulls out the subpoena on live television, which you don't usually see the subpoena. It was like everything about it was like, holy smokes, this is good television.
It's just so fascinating. And then we have, and I know we have to get a little of the Gary Cohn on here, but I want to move on because There's another story that under any other circumstances talking about. I mean, but the Gary Cohn thing, I will ask you one time because I know you know more about it than I do. This is, in your opinion, is this based on his policy on tariffs for steel?
Yeah.
Is that why Gary Cohn finally said enough? Because Gary Cohn is thinking this is bad for the economy, as many Republicans are saying, and Democrats, about
right?
This.
And you reference this. I mean, he almost walked out of the door during the Charlottesville stuff last summer when Trump said there was blame on all sides and failed to condemn white nationalists and the KKK. He thought that was not so great. He almost walked. He didn't, because he was trying to steer this economic policy. He thought he had talked Trump off the ledge with the 25% steel tariffs, the 10% aluminum tariffs, and he had not. So I think that was really the last straw for him, where it was like, well, if he's not going to listen to me, I'm going to roll. And the one thing I want to point out about trade deficits, not to get super wonky here, but you hear the president saying trade deficits are bad. They're terrible. You know, we need fair trade. We'd have equal trade.
These countries are screwing us. They're taking advantage of the United States.
Trade deficits, you know, the economists I've talked to over the years, they're not good or bad. They are just the difference between what you import and what you export. And sometimes it makes more sense to import more than to export more. For instance, you know, I heard a great example this week, and it was when you go buy a sandwich, right? Maybe you go to Pret a Manger to buy a sandwich every day. It costs you $10, right? So by the end of the week, you've given Pret $50. They've given you.
Where's Pret a Manger?
It's everywhere. It's a chain.
Is that like Subway?
It's like a French Subway. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Pret a Manger. If you walk in the
city dweller, I'm out here. I'm in the burbs of Fort Myers, Florida. Pret a Manger. Is that like Jersey Mike's?
Pret a Manger. What is that? That Pret a Manger.
So you're saying that's the expensive place, Pret a Manger?
No, I mean, I'm saying that if you go into Union Station, you can go to Pret a Manger. You can go to Au Bon Pain. You can go to Le Quidion. Like, there's like three French places. The French are taking over our chains.
I would like a French dip, please.
I would like a baguette. So anyway,
so I'm sorry, I interrupt. Go ahead.
So I bought my sandwich at Pret, right? I give him $50 and you know, I get a sandwich. So now there's a trade deficit between me and Pret of $50, right? But that's taking into consideration. Sure, I could go buy my sandwich works at the supermarket, then I could take the time to make all of the sandwiches, and that might be less efficient for me. And so it just makes more sense for me to buy it from Pret. It's faster, it's easier, and it's more convenient. That's what you see in economies that are first world higher end economies. They tend to import more things because they have more money to buy them for the convenience, and they export less.
Right. So let me explain it to my fans. All
okay,
right? So if I go to Chipotle and I get the bean burrito at Chipotle, I could go to the grocery store and buy the tortillas and the beans and the rice and put it and make it. It would take an incredible amount of time, but then I wouldn't be as efficient using my time than if I just went into Chipotle and had the kid with the pimples make the burrito.
Right. I mean, you are a radio star. You have other things to do.
I wish I was talking just the other day. I wish I was like Oprah and could have someone make my, then I'd get the benefit of not only making the stuff in my own kitchen, but somebody's there to, so I can maximize my time. That's a different story. I understand what you're saying.
So
they're part of the deal. Trade deficits are part of the way the system works.
And I just want our listeners to understand, they're neither good nor bad. They are just a thing. And the president makes
them
bad.
Trump doesn't think so.
Well, you know, but you also have to question his grasp of economics. And to your point, getting back to, that's probably why Gary Cohn was like, dude, I'm out. I can't talk sense to this guy.
That's it. And now he's
along with 100 other Republicans who are like, please, Mr. President, don't do this.
And the fear, of course, is that he will bring in an economic advisor who also doesn't have a knowledge of economics, and the dance will continue.
Well,
chaos will continue. This is a clown college we are dealing with. He wanted
his personal pilot to run the FAA. I mean, he ran a plane. He can run a government agency. I mean, lots of experience there, Mike.
He's a great pilot. We don't hit a lot of turbulence. He goes up. He's on time 30% of the time. He should run the whole FAA. Yes, he does great in wind shear. He's really, really talented. Wonderful. He does a fantastic job. I can drink my Coca-Cola and eat my French fries without bouncing around in the sky.
The next story, and this, by the way,
speaking of
the thing
turbulence,
that stuns me about Stormy and
Stormy
Daniels,
Stormy.
in a normal world, in another administration, this would be soul-crushing to an administration.
Oh, yeah.
And this is just matter of fact. A porn star is suing a sitting president of the United States. And you know what America's doing? Who's on Big Brother? Did Omarosa get voted off? He has created an environment through no fault of his own. He hasn't made this happen, but because of the behaviors and because going all the way back to the Access Hollywood bus, this is what people just accept this behavior because his behavior has been so bad. That's what drives me nuts about this administration. He's such a scum guy that if he does something scummy, people don't care.
Also, I like that we have music to talk about this because it always comes up that like Rob has it on the ready. It's just
because Rob Spiewak, by the way, who is celebrating his 47th birthday as we tape
Happy birthday,
Persuasions.
Robert Spiewak. It's 47.
47 years old of porn music in the background.
Yeah, that's what we have. But I love that like this. Because we talked about it, like, and you asked me, you said, Freights, do you think this story has legs?
And
that was a few weeks ago, and I said, if it stays in the news or something else happens, but otherwise it probably peters out. And in fact, it didn't peter. Oh, I didn't mean. Sorry, Rob.
See, you said it, I didn't.
It did,
General
wear
Washington.
Itself out.
There you go.
All right. Hey, now.
So there it is. Though,
so there it is. And the story,
big.
The story this week was that Stormy Daniels was like, well, here's the thing. I noticed the president didn't sign this non-disclosure agreement.
Where we used aliases.
Right. So we're
unreal. Unbelievable. Right.
So it's null and void. So I could talk about it. Meanwhile, Michael Cohen, the lawyer who is Trump's personal lawyer who did this deal, and says it wasn't on the president's behalf and that he didn't know anything about it.
Right.
Which strikes me as like, if you're a personal lawyer, do you really spend $130,000 to keep somebody quiet and not tell your client?
Right.
Anyway, the point being, he took Stormy to arbitration and was like, hey, I'm putting a restraining order on you because you are voiding this non-disclosure agreement. So now they're fighting it out, and who's going to be able to talk, when they're going to be able to talk is amazing. And you know, remember this came.
And by the way, Stormy's lawyer, meanwhile, has corroborated the fact that she had a sexual encounter with the president of the United States.
Well, I wouldn't put a lot of.
But he said that.
Why? But he wasn't in the room. He's the lawyer.
This is the lady who came out on talk shows and was asked directly about that and said nothing. This, in a way, now that they're having this legal battle, her representation, her attorney, has come out. I see what you mean.
Because she, and in that lawsuit, because she sues Cohen, a lot of those details come out that she did have the relationship. She only
Incredible.
Did it once. And then she went over and watched a Shark Week, and that's when he said he was afraid of sharks. And like all of this stuff started.
It's terrifying. I mean, and
well,
I
sharks
ask
are
you
terrifying.
About this. Sharks are terrifying. This administration is terrifying. And I know you don't say stuff like that, but I do. And I will tell you this: with all of this going on, we have the chaos of people jumping off this ship like it is a fire
into shark infested waters. I'm going to continue.
They're jumping in where the sharks are, the barracudas, the stinging jellyfish, everything that's in there. And the fact is, then you throw on top of this a massive sexual scandal with the sitting president. And I ask you this, Mr. Freights, with all of this going on, one has to, at a certain point, think that around the world, this is seriously affecting the status of the United States, the stature of the United States, that we are ripe for the picking. We are ripe for being taken advantage of. And that's what I worry about more than anything else, because you wonder, when will this end and what will be the state of the commander-in-chief, the office of the White House, the office of the presidency, when all of this finally wraps up? This man, look, I don't care what you think. This is more... All of this is unprecedented. All of this is historic, history-making. It's stunning.
And to put your finer point on your question and to paraphrase Sugar Ray, you know, will all around the world statues crumble for Trump? I don't know. I mean, I think that's what you have to ask yourself, Mike. And I think that's kind of what we're watching here is just this implosion. Now, to be fair, it's not a sexual affair with a sitting president. He was still just a reality TV host back in the day when he was inviting Stormy Daniels to his hotel suite. However,
absolutely, I
the
agree
payoff
with that.
Happened a few days before the presidential election, so she wouldn't
right.
talk. At a time, he was fighting the whole crotch-grabbing thing. And so it is pertinent. It is interesting. It should be a bigger story, except he's under investigation for maybe colluding with a foreign government, which is like even bigger than sex. Like, think about how big this Mueller investigation has to be to put sex, which is the thing that gets everybody's attention in this country, like
right.
as the second story. Like, just
Chris, I have to ask you
that.
I have to ask you this because you have gone on Fox News. You know the right better than I know the right. I am having a conversation with a golfing buddy of mine the other day who we have argued about politics. We joke about the fact that we think of politics in such a different way. And the first thing he says to me when he jumps into my golf cart, this is on the same
Was
week,
it an Escalade golf cart? Donald Trump?
No, it was not.
Because that was Stormy Daniels' first ride. Her first time
an
ever
Escalade golf
was
cart?
Ever at a golf course. She was with Donald Trump, and she got in his Escalade golf cart. And I wondered if you
no,
Mike O'Mara, have a luxury golf cart.
Mine is not nearly that classy, but right. I appreciate you thinking of
Gold
me.
Rims.
And the first thing this guy says is something along the lines of, I didn't even listen to him, but I remember the broad strokes he said.
Well, it's a good thing he doesn't listen to
Hillary's,
your show.
Hillary's in real trouble now. And I want, and the thing is, I understand we have Fox News. We have programs like Rush Limbaugh and Hannity. But I have to say this, is he still holds on to the base. He still holds on to a segment of America.
All your base belongs to us, Donald Trump.
And even with the differing politics that we all have, it astonishes me that this man continues to do what he does, and people in the true believer category are not affected. Many of them, evangelical Christians, are not affected by a story like Stormy Daniels, Chris. I don't get it. And I would appreciate, why are you dancing? Why are you
dancing?
Because
I still have the Stormy song in my head.
All right, I have to ask you, why?
Why do I have it in my head?
How are these people not bailing on the president with a story like Stormy?
I have
Daniels.
Answers to your questions.
Please, I'm going to throw up my mouth if you keep dancing like that. I'm really getting disgusted.
It's beautiful, and everyone here loves it, okay?
No. If I never see that again,
we had people. We had people watching the taping just a minute ago, and they all were into it, okay?
I bet you were doing that about 12:30 in Frisco last week.
My audience.
I bet I could see that.
My audience loves it. Anyhow.
CNN, huh?
So why do Republicans stand by Donald Trump despite Donald Trump being Donald Trump, and
right
why
now,
do they continue?
So many bad things.
So
happening.
I was having a conversation about this very thing with a senior staffer to a prominent Republican member of Congress just this week over lunch. And I said, dude, what's with the Hillary stuff, man? Like, she's not in the public sphere. You keep pointing to it. What's up? And he says, you know, you're right. Like, it plays to our base. But I think it's also us reminding ourselves, okay, this guy is kind of a disaster. But it could be so much worse. It could be her. And Republicans
much
feel that way. They're like, well,
they still feel that way.
Well, because they got Gorsuch. They got tax cuts. So, like, this guy's kind of a walking dumpster fire. But, like, we're getting things we would have never dreamed of under Hillary Clinton. We have to remind ourselves of that. And that is part of what they're doing. And the base, your friend, feels very similarly. So they can kind of talk to each other about it as, like, a group therapy. Like, well,
but it's
it could
not
be worse.
True. It is not
well,
true.
That's an opinion,
it could
Mike.
Not be
that's
worse.
An opinion.
But it could not be worse. The status of the United States, our stature as a nation, is being affected by this administration. And I think when you talk about, just earlier in the show, we talk about he wants his pilot to run the FAA. He wants his buddies there. It's that's what I worry about. And I think, well, obviously, they put up the smokescreen of the lady that didn't get elected, and they're still trading I'm the lady that didn't get elected,
and they know
it just stuns me. It's just, it's horrible. It's horrible. We are in a. It seems like the idea of merit based accomplishment is gone. If I agree with you and you agree with me, you can do any goddamn thing you want. And if you play for the other team, then you're wrong no matter what you do. And that is a. I just think we seem to be going down this rabbit hole further and further, and we are living in a more dangerous world because of it. Because the result of your team, my team, is a situation where look what we have. Look what we have. Hey, it could be worse. No. I would say to all of these people, it could not be worse. It, you know, it could not be worse
Mike,
than it is.
Mike, I need to remind you, it could always be worse, my friend.
It could always be worse. Excuse me. I got the cancer diagnosis the same day I crossed the street and was hit by the tour bus, but it could be worse because right. I still have the vision in my right eye. Yes, you're right, Chris. It could be worse.
It could be it worse. Could and be. In fact, it's been interesting because Cohen, you know, you've seen the Dow drop a little bit with him, you know, the announcement that he's leaving the White House. He was viewed among Wall Streeters as one of them. Of course, you know, he was at Goldman Sachs for a long time. And that kind of market exuberance that we've seen under Donald Trump that he likes to point to. I mean, the market's up, unemployment is down.
I don't like to point to it anymore, though.
Less now. But I was reading an interesting piece this week by my buddy Ben White in Politico, and he was talking to Wall Street, and they were like, well, look, it's, you know, put aside all the same kind of thing, put aside all of this other stuff. The market's in good shape, the economy's in good shape, we're making money, we're happy. But he made the point that, like, is it possible? It may not be possible for the market to price in things like nuclear war possibilities, or that the president is indicted or impeached. Like that's not,
or that the allies are upset with us.
Right. Like that's not something that gets kind of priced into the market because it's not something that is normal. And so that there still could be a huge downturn on one of these events, as you point out, that we kind of seem to be headed for, you know, a cataclysm. Everybody in the country is kind of holding their breath. Like, I hope nothing goes bad while, you know, he's driving the train. But when it does, what will that cost? Wall Street might not be prepared to even give us a glimpse of what that looks like.
So you're, is that, are you indicating that perhaps we could have a truly dire situation in the markets?
Oh, everything could go to hell in a handbasket.
So it could be worse.
Immediately.
So you're absolutely right. You make your point. It could absolutely be worse.
Yes. You joke, but it could be worse.
Wow. It's just amazing. Do you think, once again, I ask you again, because we thought it would go away. Do you think the Stormy thing continues?
Yes.
Will this get curiouser and curiouser? Is that the way?
Turn
it off. Turn it off. I don't want to look at that. Thank you very much. Please do not do that.
I do think it'll get curiouser and curiouser. I think that is definitely something that we should continue to look forward to now that it's in the courts. Courts are open places with open documents that reporters can go request. I look forward to more court filings in that case.
One of the things that we did not discuss this week, and I just have a question for you about it. You remember that that wonderful show where I was screaming about gun control?
What show? I don't remember that show.
It was wonderful. It drove you out to San Francisco.
The fact I need to leave.
I had to get out of the Eastern Seaboard.
I could still hear Mike echoing in my mind.
Screaming at the top of his lungs. I am curious because a lot of us that are for gun control and a lot of us that are still thinking about the tragedy in Parkland, I wonder, has the NRA weathered another storm? Have they survived this? Are we moving back towards business as usual? Or do you see some traction legislatively about gun policy in the United States?
So I'll do my usual on the one hand, on the other hand here, because I think it's a bit of a mixed bag. When you look at nationally what's happening today at the White House, Donald Trump is bringing in video game executives, some senators trying to make this case that, well, we have so much violence in our culture. How do we deal with that? That's something that
smokescreen.
That is something that has been out there for a long time. And the studies.
Smokescreen! But I mean, well,
no,
hold on.
Please go ahead.
When you say that matter of factly, that's what the NRA wants. They want the video game.
Oh, God. Here we go. So
but
hold on.
Doesn't Wayne LaPierre say, oh, he's bringing the video game people in? That's good, right?
Hold on. Okay. Hold on.
Sorry.
All right, thank you.
All right.
So, he's bringing the video game people in, and he wants to talk about violence in Hollywood and video games. That plays well to his base. You know, his base hates Hollywood. But, Mike, here's where I was. Here's what I was going to say. If you look at the studies over the last two decades, there has not been a causal link between video games and actual shooters and killers out in the real world. In fact, the video game association and industry will make the case, look, video games and Hollywood entertainment are, you know, are distributed throughout the world, and the world doesn't have the same kind of mass shootings we do. So it's a canary in the coal mine.
Yep.
But to your point, yes, the NRA loves talking about that. And that's exactly where Trump's going with this. So nationally, I wonder, are we going to get kind of real movement on gun legislation? I think that is up in the air. But what surprised me this week was your home state of Florida, where we did see some legislation. In fact,
lay the good news on me, please.
The good news is that the legislature sent a bill to Rick Scott that would raise the age to buy guns from 18 to 21 and ban bump stocks. Both things that the NRA has been against, and
it's not everything, but it's something.
It's not everything,
it's significant.
But it's something that they fought very, very hard, and that would be interesting to see.
Is Scott going to sign it? Is he going to sign
it? That's the question. I do not know. I've not made any calls to his office. But
well, the interesting thing about Rick Scott is that
there's lots of interesting things about Rick Scott.
Yeah. Oh, he's something else. We have him down here in Florida. He was a no-show, by the way, at the CNN town hall. He was invited. He didn't show up. You know, the spokesperson for the NRA showed up, but Rick Scott didn't. And Marco Rubio did. And I think that's very important. I think that when you think about that down here in South Florida, I don't think it'll impact his political fortunes. He wants to run for Senate. But it was significant that he was
that,
not
that does
that
not
meeting.
Surprise me, having interviewed Rick Scott on a number of occasions, going all the way back to Obamacare when he was pushing against the public option. He was pouring money into campaigns to defeat that. And when you asked him, you said, well, sir, you're a CEO who had one of the biggest Medicaid fraud settlements brought against your company. Right. What moral high ground do you have to argue about what's good for American healthcare? He just wouldn't answer that question. You know, he'd want to talk to you about why the public option was bad, but he would not answer questions. So to that point, doesn't surprise me he didn't show up at a town hall to
take
questions.
A lot of kids over on the east side of the state down here in South Florida that really, really hope that we get some traction. Those kids have had tears in their eyes in the Florida state legislature, and I really do hope that we make progress. I still am planning on heading over to the other side of the state on March 24th for the big march that they're going to have.
Oh.
And I hope that it still continues to have traction. It's something that's become very important to me, and I can only speak for myself when I say this issue has not gone away in my mind. I close my regular show with a message about gun safety each and every day, and I really do hope that we do make some progress, but to be seen.
Is that like, do you have it down to like a Bob Barker, like please have your pet spayed neutered?
That's exactly.
Like,
each day, 96 Americans are killed by guns. Visit every town for gun safety to find out how we can end gun violence in the country. It's not much, but it's what I do. And it's something that makes me feel good, and it makes me think that maybe I'm doing a little bit to open people's eyes about guns.
What's been the audience reaction to that?
You know what? I have not gotten a tremendous amount of negative feedback, nor have I gotten a tremendous amount of positive feedback. It's kind of automatic. And I think people accept the fact that there are those of us in this country that feel strongly about this. But there are also people that I find that are on the other side of this issue. When you bring up the issue of video games, they immediately go to that.
Oh,
and
sure.
They immediately drink in the talking point. And I just think that I like to have faith in my fellow citizenry and think that regardless of where you are.
Well, you got to have faith.
You got to have faith, as George Michael said.
Yes.
The fact is, though, I hope that people want the end result to be the same. Because if we go down the same road we're going on, we're going to have another one, and we're going to have another one, and we're going to have another one. And I just pray that that's not the case. And you know another thing that I pray? I pray that
you got to make it today. Somehow you pray.
Do you have any listener feedback?
I got some listener mail. I want to point out that our theme song was brought to you by Stephen Robeson today. He suggested it. We played it, Foster for the People. So, Steve, that was for you, brother.
Very good. I enjoyed every minute of it.
And Karen Travers tweeted out, she said, instead of a White House visit, NBA champ Golden State Warriors will take DC kids to the National Museum of African American History and Culture, to which Geekster Dad asked, do you think the Eagles will do something similar instead of visiting Trump this summer? And I think this is a very interesting question. It's one I've talked about with Eagles fans, with politicians. If there ever was a team that was going to do that, I think it would be the Philadelphia Eagles. They took a different approach to the kneeling. They didn't have individual players kneel. The owner came out. The players came out. They all locked arms with law enforcement and military to make their stand. A number of Eagles have said they would not make the trip to the White House if they won a Super Bowl, and they reiterated that after they did win the first world championship in Philadelphia history, I want to point out. And then, you know, what does that mean? What kind of message does that send? I think if any team were to do it, it would be the Eagles, Geekster Dad. I think we should watch for that and what kind of response that engenders both in Philadelphia and across the world. But I thought it was very interesting for the Golden State Warriors to take kids to the African American History Museum in the Smithsonian. So,
well,
I have a scoop for you.
Give me a scoop. Geekster Dad, I have a scoop for you because I have it right here. The story just came across my desk that the Eagles have announced what they're going to do.
Have they?
They have made an announcement.
Breaking news.
In tribute to their fans, they will not be meeting with the president, but prior to the appointment at the White House, they will be drinking a case of Budweiser beer and throwing up in the Rose Garden. That's what they will be doing.
Philly. He also,
Do you have one more? Because that usually would be my kicker.
I think that's your kicker. Geekster Dad also likes our new logo, so thank you for that, brother.
Oh, that's wonderful. we share that. Anyway, that was a very informative Political Persuasions. I don't think I got too out of control.
It was fantastic. It was fun.
It's good to have you.
Rob says, "Man,
happy birthday, Rob." Next week, who knows? The show continues, and our show will continue. And please don't make me watch him dance next week.
I like Faith, though. It's a good riff. We'll see you next week.
I'm Mike O'Meara. Bye bye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Political Persuasions. If you have a comment or question for Political Persuasions, please send it to @Frates on Twitter. That's F-R-A-T-E-S. Thank you. You can download Political Persuasions on iTunes, MikeOMaraShow.com, Stitcher, and wherever fine podcasts are found. Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.